Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed.
Hey, everybody. This is Harvey Sluggo Wasserman. We are back for the 76th. This is the 76th. I'm 76, and this is the 76th call. Actually, I'll be 76. December 31st, you will all go out and celebrate. Drink one for me. This is the Grassroots Emergency Election Protection Coalition call. We are going to go for a good hour and a half, and then we'll turn off the recording and talk another 20 minutes. We are engineered by Mike Hirsch and Steve Caruso, co-convened by Joel Siegel and many, many more. And we have a great lineup today. We will be on the Progressive Radio Network at Thursday, 5 p.m. Eastern time, in my usual Solartopia Green Power and Wellness slot. Glad to have you all on with us. We're now up to 70 folks. And we have a full vote as always. We're gonna have the great, wonderful Mayor Jennifer Roberts on to talk to us about election protection and her connection now with the Carter Center in Atlanta. Really, really big deal, Jennifer. We are always honored to have you on with us. We may have Thorne Dreyer to talk about his book from Texas. I'm not sure if he's been able to make the connection, but we're then going to go to Brian Steinberg in my beloved Ann Arbor to talk about the great work that he's done distributing funds and other help to the election protection movements. Then we have Paul Ryder. Paul and I co-conspired in Ohio many years ago to deal with nuclear power plants when the great Richard Celeste was governor of Ohio. I think he was the last decent and even sane governor that Ohio has had. We're going to follow that with a report on the 5G destruction of the oceans. And then at the top of the hour, at 3 o'clock Eastern, 3 o'clock Pacific, 6 o'clock Eastern, we'll be joined by Dennis Bernstein, who is the host of the Flashpoint show on KPFA, Pacifica, nationally syndicated. And we're going to talk with him and Tatanka and Dr. Ruth about Julian Assange and about Leonard Peltier, reality winner, and Jeffrey Danziger, and all the other things that are going on with political prisoners. So a hugely stacked agenda, as always. We are honored to start with the great Jennifer Roberts. Jennifer, we're going to give you all the time you need. We want to hear about what's going on with election protection and the Carter Center in Georgia. So please take it away, Jennifer Roberts.
Joel has his hand up.
Joel, are you jumping in here, or are you gonna please? Yes, I forgot. Please give Jennifer the introduction. She deserves it. Jennifer, I understand that you have a great jump shot. So if Joel would tell us about that, it would be great.
My middle hit spike is even harder.
Well, so is her tomahawk slam dunk. So anyway, I've known Jennifer since I was in high school. We went to East Mecklenburg together, where she was always the valedictorian of our class. And volleyball, basketball star, but then she went to UNC Chapel Hill, but she spent years in the diplomatic corps in Latin America, Central America. But then she was the most progressive mayor of Charlotte. And I know that because I'm from here. And then when she was two-time chair of the county commission. Is that right, Jennifer? Two-time chair?
Three terms, actually.
Wow. Okay. Three. And but also, Jennifer led the effort in Charlotte to move our city to 100% clean, renewable energy in the transportation and housing sectors. And she had a lot of opposition. And I saw her navigate through that opposition. I think she's one of the most important national leaders in our country on climate change. She also just co-founded with me and Reverend Ronnie Sadler. It's a Truth and Reconciliation Commission called the Reimagining America Project. And now she's working with the Carter Center on voter suppression. I hope she runs for Senate one day in North Carolina or Congress. But anyway, I'm just honored to always, whenever I have an opportunity to introduce Jennifer, I like to do that. So anyway, that's it. Thanks, Jennifer.
Well, Joel, I'm really glad I saw your hand up. You're as gracious as my mother would be introducing me.
Thank you.
Well, Joel is a Jewish mother at heart. So
chicken soup coming to you, Mayor.
Well, I tell you, it is. It's always great to be with this group because it's wonderful to be with people who really care about the future of not just their own life, but of all the lives in America. And they think everybody should have a fair shot and that we should support our democracy. And that's what I'm going to talk about today. And I won't take the whole as long as I want, because that would be way too long. I'm going to try to do this in 10 to 15 minutes and leave a little time for questions. The Carter Center, as you know, and I'm just going to I'm going to go ahead and start my slides here. If I can see, I don't have. Oh, yeah, I do. Hold on. Here we go. And this is a presentation that I've given a couple of times. Here we go. That's actually a picture of me hugging a tree.
I thought the tree was hugging you.
It feels really good, actually, to hug a tree. They're so sturdy. And so what we know and looking at our country is that we are more polarized than we've ever been. Since the Civil War, which is pretty much since we've ever been. And the Carter Center has been looking at this. As you know, they look at elections around the world in tough places in Africa and Asia and trying to make sure that they are fair, secure, free elections. They started looking at the U.S. in 2020. We all know why. And the what they have seen with the information they're gathering is that we are more divided over our political values than ever. If you look at this chart, things like religion and age and race are not as divisive as political parties. And so today the party divide is wider than any of these demographic differences. And there, you know, these are things that we've been talking about in election protection. Our demographics have changed. We're much more diverse. We have closed media ecosystems. By the way, both Fox News and MSNBC started in 1996. And we've been getting more and more ferociously divided since then as we choose our media sources. We have income inequality from bad tax policy, among other things. We have a growing awareness of racial inequality from numerous incidents and truths that are being revealed. We are declining our trust in institutions. Who would have thought we would stop trusting the CDC and doctors and medical researchers for political reasons? And we don't have, we are starting to sort, you know, the great sort into politically homogeneous communities that are at odds with each other. Group status downgrade is another way of saying that there are a lot of white people who recognize that they are losing their political power because we are diversifying. And so they feel like their status of privilege is being downgraded. This leads to a number of those groups feeling threatened. And when you look at how we compare to other industrial societies, we're pretty divided. We're way out there with South Korea when it comes to political divide. On ethnic and racial divide, we're way out to the right. We're better on religion. And our rural-urban divide is not as great as some countries, but we're pretty much out there compared to countries around the world. We know what's driving this is that belonging has become more important than facts. We know that facts went out with the alternative facts and the post-truth scenario that we saw under the Trump administration. We also know that liberals and conservatives have difference in their moral formation, and they continue to, as they choose their media sources, to solidify in those perspectives, and those predispositions shape our response to politics. Politics has become our identity. Partisanship is now a mega identity that connects with psychological and behavioral magnifications. We even look at grocery stores and figure out whether there's a progressive or a conservative community. It has just infiltrated every aspect of our society. So what do we see that is a direct threat? And I put pictures of armed, everybody recognizes the bottom right, when they were trying to protect the Capitol on January 6th. And there's a militia group in Louisville. It's a black militia group on the top. But our counter-majoritarian structures, we've talked about this, the Electoral College, the Senate, things that do not represent the will of the people. And if you add to the sectarianism, the media silos, then we are lacking in accountability, and our whole sense of norms and common values is being eroded. Not to mention the misinformation flow. The Carter Center did a study on unreliable websites and social media sites. They are five times as likely to repost proven false material. So, you know, it's like Mark Twain said, a lie gets halfway around the world before the truth can put on its pants. That is absolutely true of misinformation as well. And social media has made it much worse. The last thing, of course, well, there are many more things, but the last major thing is the prevalence of guns. We have been unable to reduce the presence of guns here in Charlotte. We've had 18 different incidents already this school year of guns in our schools. They are just too easy to get a hold of, and it is too hard to put controls on them. I did a quick overview. These are issues in every state in our country, but these are some of the things driving our polarization in North Carolina. We have a struggle between our governor and our General Assembly. We've had redistricting, which is currently under numerous lawsuits. We've had the whole critical race theory and the anti-maskers, the LGBT issue with our HB2 several years ago when I was mayor. The faith-based exclusions are starting to really make their way into our legislation so that you can avoid certain things because of your religion. And it's a lot of bad things that you are allowed to avoid. Racial injustice has become very prevalent, and people are more aware. The court cases we have, and then, of course, our rural-urban divide. We also know in recent surveys that 55% of Republican respondents believe that we may have to use force to save our democracy or to save their way of life, which is, you know, the traditional American way of life, which if you're a woman or a person of color, the traditional American way of life is not really that attractive. But we know that many people, and this is a picture of one of the Proud Boys, perfectly fine getting his photo in the AP. And we see that support for political violence is rising. So the Carter Center is working with Princeton to actually try to analyze what makes a community more open to violence or have a possible incident of violence in the future based on past incidences, but also based on the polarization in that community. They looked at four different aspects: the polarization, the lessening social trust, mobilization, which means the likelihood that there'll be protests and the size of the protests, potential for violence, which is based on a number of things, prevalence of the military, of hate groups, of paramilitary groups, past incidents of violence, gun ownership, gun laws, open carry, these kind of things. And the last is political relevance, and that just means battleground states. So why is North Carolina in this initiative? Because in their national ranking of the potential for violence around elections, we had several of our counties in the top 100 out of 3,143 counties. That's actually a picture from the first day of our George Floyd protests. Yes, that white gentleman with the North Carolina flag is carrying a semi-automatic weapon down the street. So this is the top scoring counties in the Princeton, they call it the Bridging the Divide Initiative. And again, they've looked at 3,100 and something counties. Maricopa County, I know there are several folks on who've been on this program from Maricopa, is at the top. Wake County, which is where Raleigh, our state capital, is number 12. And the list goes on. And you can see the index score based on those four factors. Now, this is this is one model. It's not entirely predictive. It's kind of like the stock market. And I say past results are not predictive of future results, but it is a helpful helpful outline for what we might be seeing. This is a picture after the George Floyd protests, and we had some windows smashed and some people put love, not hate on one of our storefronts. So the Carter Center is trying to engage people in key battleground states with cross-partisan groups, trying to build social and personal ties, much of like what we're doing in Charlotte with the Reimagining America Project, trying to strengthen shared identities, finding some common ground when there is still some, leveraging any kind of cross-partisan institutions, League of Women Voters, these kind of things that are supportive of democracy in general and not one party or the other. And they are trying to find messaging that resonates on shared values. So these are the states that the Carter Center is looking at in 2022. They started this work in 2020, but very late. In fact, they had not very much impact, clearly, because we had January 6th, though they do believe they had some impact in Georgia, because they got on the ground much earlier in Georgia, and they had the later Senate runoff races that were in January. And so they had more time to build up some of that social trust and engagement and information sharing. They're trying to find two people in each of these seven states to help lead the effort to support civil elections, civil campaigns, nonviolence in elections, and who would have thought, to try to get candidates to say they will accept the results after the election. That kind of messaging to try to support democratic institutions and the basic peaceful transfer of power. This is where we've gotten to in America. So these are the folks they have so far on board. And if any of you are in these states, feel free to reach out. I have to say, in terms of Arizona, former Congressman Ron Barber, who was with Gabby Giffords when she was attacked and shot, he also was wounded and took her seat after she could no longer serve in Congress. He is in the process of being hired. So he will be joining the Carter Center in January for this project. We have a former state representative in Florida, Jennifer Webb, who says that the Republicans raised about $3 million to unseat her from her state legislative seat. In North Carolina, we have myself and former Supreme Court Justice Bob Orr. He ran as a Republican, won statewide as a Republican. He has since become unaffiliated. So he is not in the party of Trump, but he has a lot of connections in the conservative party and in conservative leaders in North Carolina. And we need to get people in both parties supporting the basic principles of democracy. In Georgia, some of you may know there's a media commentator. He's, I think he's on CBS. He's been on CNN, Rashad Ritchie. He has a radio program as well. He is the progressive and Leo is the Leo King is the conservative, who's also a commentator. Didn't put his name down, but so some of the things that they are looking to in trying to message and image shared values. They pointed to this, the shared identity after the killing in the Squirrel Hill area at the synagogue there in Pittsburgh. The Steelers came out with this symbol. Sorry, it just makes me emotional to remember that, to show their support. And, you know, it's we've seen this before with Boston Strong and Pittsburgh Strong and these kind of things. That's the idea that the Carter Center wants to create as they can in each of the states to make it your patriotic duty to support free, fair, safe, secure elections. These are some examples of the messaging they use in Georgia leading up to the Senate runoff elections. trying to restore trust in election officials. The average one has worked in 7 previous elections, which is true. I know, I see my precinct election workers every year. I've seen them for the last 20 years, it seems like. We can trust them. And they even had a cute little thing with the Georgia Tech Yellow Jacket and the Georgia Bulldog, and trying to, again, get people to respect each other and not lead to violence. They're also thinking of asking, and they did this in Georgia, candidates to sign on to a pledge, basic acceptance of election rules. This is a draft. We don't have it finalized for any of the states, but basically saying everybody has a right to register. They can vote freely without interference or fear. They can follow the law. Their vote should be counted. I mean, this is like basic stuff, but it's gotten to the point where we need to have candidates actually sign on to support this. They also are going to conduct their campaigns with peace and nonviolence, contributing to a peaceful atmosphere, pre-election polling counting and post-election, not use hate speech, not use inflammatory symbols or language, denounce violence when it happens. Don't say, you know, stand by. Say, be very definite in saying we do not support violence and it needs to cease. And then acting with dignity and respect. These, again, are not controversial standards of elections. The Carter Center has put these forward in countries around the world that have much worse history of democracy than we do. But it is amazing that we still need to get candidates to agree to these things. This is a slide from North Carolina, just some of the organizations that we want to connect with. We are trying to build networks in each of those 7 states of people who care about elections, who know about elections, who know that elections make a difference for their issue, like the League of Conservation Voters. We have to have the right candidates if we're going to protect our environment and stop climate change. There are some nonpartisan groups, League of Women Voters, Crossing Party Lines, Common Cause, Green Faith. But we also are trying to reach out to conservative and progressive organizations because they also should care about maintaining our democracy and not reverting into civil war. So these are organizations that exist around the country. We also think the faith community is going to be very important, especially in Georgia and North Carolina, and potentially in other states as well. I know that North Carolina, it's very important. We have conservative faith leaders and progressive faith leaders, but we are finding people who are willing to stand up and say, democracy is important and we need to protect it. So I went through that really fast because I wanted to have time for questions. And I know that we've got other speakers, but thank you for paying attention. What can you do? We hope to have messaging that can be shared universally. And remember, 2022 is practice for 2024. We want to see what works. We want to see, does messaging get through? What are the common values that conservatives and progressives can support and believe in? What are they willing to stand up for? Who are the influencers? These can be national as well as state influencers who are willing to share the message, who are willing to do a video. Again, everybody can be part of this. Everybody can play a role. If you're in any of the 7 target states, you can email me and I'm happy to connect you with the work the Carter Center is doing. But remember, this is going to go on to 2024 as well. This is the rehearsal and this is practice and we're going to learn from this. And we hope that we learn a lot because we need to make sure we maintain our democracy. That's it.
Wow. Fantastic. Thank you very much, Jennifer. That was really magnificent. This is Jennifer Roberts, for those of you who've come in late. I do want to share quickly, I read a piece about January 6th, and they said that the number one indicator of who was at January 6th breaking into the Capitol were people who lived in counties where the percentage of white people dropped. I mean, that is an astounding statistic.
You know what else is interesting, Harvey? It's that's that group status downgrade of people who were the majority, who were in power, who are seeing that power erode because of an increasingly diverse country. That's one of the reasons. The other thing they found, and this is kind of shocking, is that the more educated number of people who have college degrees is one of the things that they measured. The more educated folks are the more likely to be entrenched in their belief systems. And so there are more likely to be conflict with higher numbers of college educated folks.
Wow, that's interesting. Well, yeah. I guess, it's, you know, like the people who went to Michigan really hate people from Columbus. What can I tell you? But yes, okay, we're gonna take a couple questions. Jennifer, that's one of the most amazing presentations I've ever seen. And I hope you will continue with us, and that everybody here, if you'll put in the chat how people get a hold of you and the Carter Center, that would be really tremendous. Thank you so much for that, Jennifer. We have 90 people on the call. I'm going to try and get some questions here. Justin, Dennett, and David, real quick, please. Justin?
So when it comes to parties, the Republican Party's ethos is very competitive by nature, whereas the Democrats is collaborative by nature. One, I'd be curious to see how you see that in terms of our elections hierarchy and our election systems, like, first past the post versus ranked choice voting or something like that. But the one thing I really wanted to ask is, so is Carter Center going to be releasing this to pundits so they can use it as basically a check on media activity?
Absolutely. We want the media to use this to do stories about this initiative. We want to have the media engage. Like I said, the gentleman in Atlanta is a radio host. On the progressive side, and then the conservative has also been on numerous talk shows. We absolutely want this to be talked about. We want people to sign on to it. We want to hold people accountable. The more who know this, the merrier. And if you have any ideas of great media outlets or talk shows for any of the folks in these states to be on, let me know. And you're right about the Republicans. It's more important for us to reach out to conservatives because they, as you saw in that slide about people willing to go to violence, they are much more inclined for violence.
Amazing. Okay. Dinette, please. Dinette.
Yes. Hi, Mayor Roberts. Thank you so much for being here. I would love to have you on PDA's Progressive Town Hall that we have on Sundays. I think everyone needs to hear this presentation, and we need to get more people on board, not only with PDA, but all progressive groups across the board. My thing is getting more people on board and breaking down silos. We need to start reaching out to other groups that we haven't thought about traditionally, and we need to get this word out because we are in grave danger right now, and we need to make sure everyone's on board. Thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Reach out to me. I'm happy to do that.
Thank you. David Schlesinger from Charlotte.
Yeah, I just wanted Mayor Roberts to know I will be reaching out to her. I won't take any time now. Thank you. So I hope I can actually have a phone conversation with you at some point. And I promise to respect your time.
Sounds great. I look forward to that.
And David's an old colleague from the Clamshell Alliance, so very knowledgeable about many things. Joel Siegel?
Mayor Roberts, it was an excellent presentation, as always. The Republicans, their trope and Trump's message is that Democrats are communists. I haven't heard any Democrats push back on that. I have a friend of mine who's from Charlotte. When she was canvassing during the Biden door-to-door, activity, she said that when she asked the Latin American community how they're going to vote, she heard a very similar refrain, that the Democrats are communist, therefore they're going to vote Republican. The question I have is that not modern McCarthyism? Could there not be a lawsuit for libel or slander? And why aren't we pushing back harder when we're called communists? And the number two, can the Carter Center, like they used to go to Central America or Nicaragua, Latin America, in the 80s to monitor elections because of fraud. Shouldn't they be monitoring elections in Georgia and other cities? We got to monitor our own elections now.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why this group is so important, because we are reaching out to secretaries of state. We are reaching out to election officials. We're reaching out to state bureaus of investigation and the FBI, because they monitor hate groups. This is all hands on deck. And you're right about messaging. You absolutely, what I learned in politics, if you don't counter something, people think it's true. If you don't come back with something, if you don't respond and let it lie, it doesn't die, it becomes real. And so we absolutely are going to work on that messaging. Any of you with media or PR experience, we are happy to take your suggestions as well. We'll be putting out, you know, we're hiring a media firm. We'll be putting out images. Anybody who wants to weigh in on whether images work or not, let me know. We'll sign you up for the email list.
Fantastic. And, you know, my okay, we'll go to Eric Lazarus, then Robert, then Jeffrey, and then we'll move on. Go ahead, Eric.
Eric, Jennifer, quick question. Have you been considering at all the use of anything like citizens' assemblies, ways where we bring people together across differences so that people, I mean, I tend to think that, and in particular around election processes, I've found that when I teach people across the political spectrum about the importance of post-election audits, the importance of hand-marked paper ballots, I can totally talk to Republicans and Democrats. So I'm wondering if, you know, and Ireland famously used this citizen assembly that got them to the decision to have a referendum. Where do you think that citizens' assemblies help could be used to help bring people together? Does that make any sense, Jennifer?
Absolutely. And there are groups out there like Braver Angels is a group that was started bipartisan. Yeah, I know. Okay. They're doing a lot of talking, but we need to get real information out to people. And we'll have many, many paths to do that. Crossing Party Lines, a group here in North Carolina. And again, people are not, these are not like huge groups just yet, because 2022 feels far away and 2024 feels far away. But as we get closer, we're going to really engage a lot of people. And absolutely, citizen assemblies, election protection groups, challenges that people do not understand how many eyes are on those ballots and how many systems are checking. We've done a lot of work in this group on making sure that they are valid, that they are respected and trusted. But not everybody in America knows that. That's what we got.
Last point is when you have people debate, I don't think you really bring them together. When you ask people to solve a problem together across differences, I think you can actually create. So I'd love to talk to you about that. I'll be in touch. Thanks very much, Mayor.
Thank you, Eric. Great. Much appreciated. Robert, Jeffrey, Bill, and then we're going to move on, please.
I'm a teacher, not a politician. I'm wondering whether it's naive of me to think that we could organize ourselves into groups and reach out to those that we know are non-voting or are not registered to vote. Is there someone, do you think this is a possible approach here in any state?
First of all, love teachers, professors, teach about this, do free stuff in the, old folks' homes and for students and, talk about democracy. Absolutely. And any outreach that you can work on is terrific. So I'd love to have your ideas. Just send me an email. There's lots of room for professors, write op-eds. I mean, all kinds of great things you can do.
Thank you.
Okay, wonderful. Jeffrey, then Bill, and then we're going to move on. Jeffrey, real quick, please.
Jennifer, I wonder if we can have a one-on-one chat because I thought that
put your contacts, Jeffrey, in the,
I already have hers.
Okay, very good. So go ahead.
Send me an email. Be great.
Thank you, Jeffrey. Much appreciated. Bill Thanks. Fleming. Bill, I think this is your first time on to speak, and then we're going to move.
As a Virginian, we have votes every year. I think that it would be good to spread out not just those seven states, but to make it statewide across the country. We certainly need that here in Virginia. The Republicans have taken over the governorship, and with that, they're going to take over majority voting in all the election boards as well. So we're at threat. So I'm looking forward to getting your contact information in the slide deck so that I can maybe do something to help rally people around here. It's a great effort you all are doing, but we all need to kick in together. We can't get things progressing unless we get more progressives in Congress, both the House and the Senate. We need to work on that in 2 years and in 4 years and so on. Thanks.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks for that. I look forward to you reaching out and absolutely let's work together. Every state should be doing something like this. The Congress only has money for seven right now.
All right, Jennifer. We really appreciate it. We hope you'll come back and continue with us. You've been on since the very beginning, and your work is magnificent, and we really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Your contacts are in the chat.
Yep.
And we will be in touch.
Thanks. I'll stay on and answer any chats that I can, too. I'm listening to other folks.
Oh, okay. Great. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it. Okay. We're going to move to Brian Steinberg. Dennis Bernstein, you're on the call. I told you top of the hour, probably go a little more like 10 past. If you can hang with us, that would be really appreciated. Brian Steinberg in
Ann Arbor. Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
Joel, do you want to real quickly introduce Brian, and we can talk about why Brian's on, and then we're going to go to Paul Ryder, a brief presentation on undersea 5G, and then we'll go to Dennis Bernstein and others to talk about Julian Assange. Okay. Brian, go ahead, please. Joel, you want to introduce Brian?
Yeah, Brian won an international contest for the best beard.
Oh, geez.
For an election protection activist. No, I'm kidding. First of all, Mayor Roberts, that was an excellent presentation. Kind of very scary, but unbelievably powerful. So thank you. Brian is a leading election protection activist. Brian, you're in Michigan still, right?
Yeah, Ann Arbor, Michigan. Go Blue.
And, so he's a big Wolverine fan. He and Sluggo were chopping up about the big
news. They're doing great this year. Anyway.
But he's going to talk about, you know, incredibly important election protection work that he's doing in Michigan, which could also be a model for groups across the country. One thing, Brian, that I want to thank you for, you're really a hero. You raised a lot of money as a result of this broadcast to Atlanta for the Georgia NAACP. And I will let you know that as a result of your contribution, it was about $20,000, I think you raised. Is that correct?
$15,000 to $20,000. Specifically for this group, I was able to be introduced to Ray. We all know the great Ray McClendon from Atlanta. And he helped me to allocate those funds. I'm in Michigan. You know, how is a guy from Michigan going to help in Georgia? He helped to provide organizations that would be, including his own, best suited to get the money out to do the best good. So I was a guy with a, you know, checkbook, and I needed to, he told me where to put the checks basically. And I was able to do that because I knew, you know, you brought him on here, and I was able to be introduced to him. And that was the great relationship, which we still have, which is really great. We still do connect and with anything happening. You know, Michigan and Georgia in a lot of ways are kind of sister states. You know, a lot of people from Detroit have relationships in Atlanta, vice versa. So in a lot of ways, we are kind of sister states. We're the same size.
What exactly happened with the funding that you provided? Can you show us real quick what was
Well, I mean, I'm here for two things. I was going to talk about this, but also the constitutional amendment thing. And I actually have a slide on my slideshow. I can show pictures of literally where some of the money went. Is that what we're about to do right now?
Just go. Yeah.
Okay. Hey, there we go. Okay. So as you can see in the first slide, We did two things. One, I gave direct contributions to the NAACP in Atlanta, which is really the hub of a lot of that activity through all the different states. And so I gave him $2,500 direct contributions, but we also made these big vote signs, which were about $50 a piece. We gave 50 of them to the NAACP in Atlanta, and they distributed them through the whole entire state. They still have these. If you can see on the corner, here's the volunteers in Atlanta on the lawn at the NAACP, grounds, basically painting them to vote to do them. If you see on the left corner, there's Stacey Abrams. And on the back, there's my vote sign at a rally with Stacey Abrams. And then you go to the right corner. I don't know if you can see in the right corner. There is another rally with John Ossoff in Warnock right there. This has got media. This is on a article in the news. There they are too. So these things got all over the state. And they're very exciting. Here is in the middle, a young activist in rural Georgia with one of my vote signs. And these things are basically evergreen. They can go to any election at any time, and they're used to really rally a get out the vote message. So that
are these stored somewhere now? Where are they available to other people?
Well, I got to ask Ray. Here are the blank ones. I sent him a whole palette. There's the blank ones in the corner, and then they painted them. They're painted, so they should be weather resistant now, and they can be used for literally decades for any get out the vote event. Ray talked about doing DJ events, and they bring these to the DJ events to get out the vote. And it's a big sign. It gets attention. People stop. And so that's another $2,500 that I gave to them. So $5,000 altogether for Ray. And these signs can be used forever, so it's $2,500, but that's just going to go campaign after campaign forever. So it's kind of exciting. And I would give him more if he wanted them,
Okay.
They went out to like almost every county
folks in other states, look at these signs and see if that's a model that we can, raise money for in other locations.
And
okay, go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. So that was the Georgia thing, but I jump to the constitutional amendment stuff?
Yeah.
Okay, so if you scroll down here, in Michigan, they allow, go up to the map. Okay, in Michigan, they allow, direct constitutional amendments on the ballot. We had done that for several things, so we do it for a while, but 16 states in the United States allow direct constitutional amendments on the ballot. You get enough signatures, you can get on the ballot, and voters can vote for them. Now, there's two groups I decided. There's the striped ones. Those are the ones that I kind of feel are more open to voting for a constitutional amendment for election reform. Michigan is one of them. Of course, California, Washington, Florida. So those can do it. And if you scroll down to the next slide, these are a list of all the states by population. So, but basically all the states that can do, 16 states can do a direct constitutional amendment, which will become law, which in these basically all 16 states, if they vote for one, constitute roughly 134 million residents or citizens that represent 37% of the population of the entire country. So if every one of these states actually voted for, say, whatever, gerrymandered reform, some kind of voting something like that, say similar to the John Lewis voting, anything, whatever, we can potentially get 37% of the entire country already protected with voting rights just by using a direct constitutional amendment like we've successfully done in Michigan. So, and that's really exciting. Now, 50% of the entire country allows some form of referendum, but not a constitutional one. A constitutional ones are really locked in and super strong. That's why we're pushing for it more. It's something that can't just be overturned by the legislature in the next session. That's why we're really pushing for these 16 states that do that. And I actually earmarked kind of 9 of those states that seem to be higher on the list to do that. Michigan being larger among them, Florida, et cetera.
Okay, great.
Yeah, you want to scroll down to the next one? So, how do we do it? obviously it costs money to do that. And I just did a basic breakdown of the budget of Michigan for a ballot initiative. If you can see right now, we're in the process of the petition drive and we're trying to get the seed money for the petition drive. If you see, the smallest amount of money really is just the petition drive itself, assuming you get all paid volunteers, which we did for Prop 2 in 2018. Roughly $100,000. That just pays for the website. It pays for the physical, you know, petitions, pens, and clipboards. So if you think you need like a ton of money to do this, you really don't, at least just to get on the ballots. And that is really half, I wouldn't say half the work. 90% of the work is just getting on the ballot. Once you're on the ballot, you may get a legal challenge. Sometimes you get that. And maybe you need money later and people come in to protect, because once you're on the ballot and you're secure, people will come to protect you because you are a real thing. It's not an abstract. You literally are getting on the ballot in 2022 or whatever. And then after you're on the ballot, then you run the campaign. Then you're talking about paying for media. But even there again, that's when the bigger donors do show up to support you because you are a real thing. You will be on the ballot. Voters are going to vote for you, et cetera. And then bigger donors and groups that support you will come around. But I will say the most important part for all these 16 states is that petition drive seed money. That's where we're at right now. We're still in the process of getting it. Just do a shout out if you know any outreach for people who do want to support the ballot initiative for Michigan, the constitutional ballot for voting rights. Okay. Please contact us. That's all I'll say. But anyway, it's a really small amount of money. It's pennies on the dollar compared to like what the larger campaign would be. Okay. So anyway, that's all. So go to the next slide. And I will say this is Prop 2 and 3. This is the margin of victory. As you can see in Michigan, these were insanely popular. Prop 2 actually allowed for the it reformed gerrymandering. This allowed an independent redistricting commission to redraw the voting maps. That's Prop 2. That one with 22 point margin. Prop 3, which allowed for same day voter registration and no excuse absentee, won with 33 points. So these things are incredibly popular. They really transcend any kind of I know the Mayor Roberts was talking about identity politics. These things do not seem to really fit within partisan lines. People really do want voting rights and they really do want expanded access and easier voting. And they vote in massive margins to get it. Now, everyone scroll down to the next one. And here is a perfect example. This is Florida in 2018. This is Prop 4. If you can remember, they voted to allow ex-incarcerated people vote in Florida. You remember that? That was a really exciting thing. And here's a perfect example. Rick Scott, who was the I don't know why he's in blue. It should have been in red, I guess, whatever. Rick Scott was the Republican. He actually won that governor election. But even while he won that governor's election, the amendment to actually provide more voting rights to ex-felons won with 30 points. So obviously, if it was just an identity politics and party line, it would be 50-50, but it is not the case. I can assure you that people really do want these voting rights, voting rights for their states. They want extended access. And this is a perfect example. Election where a Republican actually won had a massive, 30 points. This is not, most elections are barely won with 1 point. This thing wasn't even close. So I just want to implore even a state like Oklahoma, who maybe you think is red, may vote for a gerrymander reform, may vote for a voting rights, some kind of voting protection similar to John Lewis. These things are really popular and it goes beyond identity politics. So, and also I just want to talk, I just want to say really quick to what Mayor Roberts said. If you're talking about actually doing this outreach for democracy, pro-democracy, understand that our campaign will need to get 500,000 signatures. Okay, so we will literally talk to 500,000 individuals who will sign this petition about voting rights and about like pro-democracy causes. That's just the signatures. We'll probably talk to twice as many people in general. So understand, if you get one of these things on the ballot or a campaign, this is one of these drives to actually push pro-democracy in your state. It is going to be massive outreach because just by the definition of needing X number 100,000 signatures, you'll be talking to hundreds of thousands of individuals about a pro-democracy ballot initiative and explain it to them. And it works. It's probably a way to get the, and we do get coalitions like Mayor Roberts said, some of the ones that she had on her list were actually ones on our list, like the League of Women Voters, the NAACP out of Detroit, et cetera. So we get a coalition to support these causes. So this is something that's real that can pass, but it also creates an incredible amount of outreach too. So this is what we're trying to pass. Basically, we're doing two bills, two ballot initiatives. One is going to be a right to vote. And here is our first, our 100 words for the right to vote. I can read it. You can read it. I don't know. Basically, I just want to note the word evidence at the end, based on substantial evidence. What the GOP is trying to do essentially is just say there's voter fraud without any evidence, and we're just going to steal the election or whatever. I don't want to say steal, like that's their term. But we're saying if you do anything that infringes upon voter rights, you better have a big chunk of evidence to prove it. And that's what we're going to, that's one of the big things. And we're going to do a ballot initiative. And this is our language for our ballot initiative. This is very similar to what, you know, Mayor Roberts was saying. It's just a basic standard of acceptance on voting and voters. And then the next one we have, go to the next one. I'm sorry, does anybody have any questions about that one?
Well, let's keep going.
Let's keep going. Okay, so then we have another ballot initiative, which is we call No More Dirty Tricks. People don't maybe not know because they don't, if you're not in Michigan, is that there's a weird loophole in Michigan that allows voters to, oh no, let's just go to the tree thing. Sorry. This is my little goofy analogy, but it's funny. That allows people to start a ballot initiative, get enough signatures, and those, that ballot initiative can go directly to the legislature. And our current legislature is Republican, and those are the same people who were voted in based upon gerrymandered districts in 2010. We're still living that. And they can pass something that would actually not go to the governor's desk for signage. That actually cannot veto it, and it will never get to the ballot for voters. So it is a complete end run around the voters and the governor, and they can just pass something through. They did something to get rid of the emergency powers for Governor Whitmer during the COVID stuff. And they're currently right now doing some really bad stuff similar to Georgia with voter ID and all sorts of stuff. They're trying to get signatures for that too. Our ballot initiative, our second one, would be reforming the ballot initiative referendum process, which would take away this one loophole. If they want to actually get something on the ballot, voters are going to have to vote for it. They want to pass something to the legislature, they're going to have to go to the governor, and the governor is going to have to sign it. So that's, if you look at my analogy, basically it's, you can have all the great little blue kind of baubles and things on your tree, but if they kind of push one big thing like this red kind of obstruction thing off, it can topple the whole tree. So that's my little Charlie Brown Christmas tree. Lastly, this is just my, I certainly open the questions, but this is just my contact information. My name's Brian Marcus Steinberg, long email. That's my phone number. If you want to support us in all sorts of ways, obviously donations is one of those, but others, if you have information on how to maybe do some outreach or any other way you want to support us, if you know how to, I don't know, do graphic design. If you don't want to, if you have some advice legally, please reach out to us. We'd love to hear from you. And that's, and also lastly too, if you are in one of those other 15 states and you want to do this now, we're kind of the moment where this is about crunch time. You need to start getting your ballot language together. We had written ballot language. We could share that with you. You can use that in part to get some of this stuff on the ballot in your state, and then start getting signatures and start raising that seed money, like we said. So you can, there's still time. There's still time to get this for 2022 in the state, in your state, assuming you're one of the 16, like Florida, Ohio, et cetera. So okay, we would love that too. We're just doing Michigan. We can't do every, we'd love to do all 16 states, you know, from a command center, but we only can do Michigan right now. Anyway, that's really what we're trying to do. If you have any questions about a constitutional amendment or, you know, anyway, please ask me. I guess that's me.
We're going to have you back for a second presentation in January, because this is really important stuff. And I do have folks waiting. Joel, do you want to jump in? Sue and Justin, then we got to move on. We have Paul Ryder, and then we have Dennis Bernstein to talk about Julian Assange. So Joel, can you jump in?
Yeah. Real
quick, and then we're going to move ahead.
Yeah, I would say as co-convener of this broadcast, Harvey, thanks again for bringing everybody together. I just wrote something in the chat. One thing that's occurred to me after I heard Mayor Roberts and then Brian is, like any progressive social movement in the history of this country, whether it was labor, civil rights, Vietnam War, universal health care, we really have to have a very serious discussion about professionalizing our movement, because it's really dawned on me that what Brian is doing, if Brian, now this is, by the way, this is not an appeal for funding, Brian, or this is just a comment I'm making. If we don't start thinking in terms of raising money in the millions and fighting voter suppression and election protection and the march to authoritarianism, we would be making a huge strategic mistake. The Republican Party is spending tens of millions of dollars on voter suppression. We're not, I don't even know if we're raising hundreds of thousands, maybe a few million. And we often say, well, let's wait for the groups in the Beltway who work on election protection, and they can't save us. But I'll conclude by saying, I think the far right wing radicals, and you know, and it's basically funded by the Heritage Foundation, Cato. The Heritage Foundation, by the way, are writing all these voter suppression laws. But there has not been a national discussion about raising money to hire organizers like Brian and others in the swing states to fight back. And that would include civil disobedience. I come from that tradition. You know, I think we should start taking over general assemblies when they pass these crazy voter suppression laws. We need campus organizers, but
well, I would say, Joel, too, to cut
I'm
in.
Finished. I'm done.
Although the thing is, these laws that they're trying to pass are very unpopular. If it wasn't for just a very partisan system in Georgia, I'm sure if they, Georgia, unfortunately, is one of the states that allow the constitutional, but I'm sure if they put this to a vote in Georgia, it wouldn't pass all the laws they're trying to do. If they put this to a vote in Michigan, the stuff, the voter ID law and stuff they're trying to do in Michigan, it would not pass on the ballot. If you saw 20 points for gerrymander reform, 30 points for same day voter registration, these things are incredibly popular. These things would not pass if it wasn't for a very restrictive system where only Republicans got a chance to say. And quite frankly, I think they shoot themselves in the foot with some of these things, because this voter ID law is going to screw with the person in the UP who doesn't have a freaking fax machine or a scanner, who can't provide a scan. I mean, it's going to screw with them, Republicans, even more. I don't think they even have an intelligence to some of the laws they're passing, because people don't want them. Our clerks are like pulling their hair out too, because they don't know how to figure out.
Steve Bannon is going after the clerks. One of the things that's going on is the right wing is replacing clerks with right wing functionaries, and it's going to be very ugly in 22 if the Democratic Party and if the election protection movement doesn't get in there and put in good clerks. We have to have a national campaign to recruit people to make sure we have decent people running these elections. I've got three hands. I've got Paul Ryder waiting, and I've got Dennis Bernstein. Dennis, can you hang with us to talk about Julian Assange? I know you're still on the call. Dennis, are you good with that? Dennis Bernstein? Okay, I'll hear him in the chat.
Harv. I'm totally delighted with what you are all doing. But you know how into the election protection movement I am, so just keep going.
All right, well, we appreciate you. Dennis is a great radio host, and we are going to get to Julian Assange. This is incredibly important stuff. Thank you, Joel, for bringing Brian on. Thank you, Brian. We're going to go through three questions. We're going to get to Paul Ryder and a quick presentation on 5G in the oceans, and then we'll devote the rest of the time to Julian Assange.
Did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, We got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia.